Hello and welcome to episode number 61 of the AFTV Newscast, being recorded October 28th, 2016. My name is Elias Saba and I run AFTVnews.com. And this is where I talk about the week's Fire TV news and related topics to the Fire TV. Got a little bit to talk about this week. Started doing my Fire TV Stick 2 to Fire TV Stick 1 comparison. So we'll definitely be talking about that, talking about my impressions of it and that sort of stuff. Also going to talk a little bit about Fire TV being deregistered and what's going on there. Also got the new Echo Dot 2 here that, like I promised last week, going to talk about that, talk about my impressions of that, compare it to the Echo Dot 1, you know, see what's different, what's the same, whether you should pick it up, whether you shouldn't pick it up, in my opinion. So it should be a good show, and let's go ahead and get right into it. All right, so first up, let's talk a little bit about the Fire TV Stick 2 and kind of what I've learned this week and playing around with it and comparing it to the Fire TV Stick 1. Haven't got to do as much as I was hoping to do in this last week, so I'm still going to be doing more comparisons in the coming week. I've got like a gaming comparison between all four devices, the Fire TV Stick 1 and 2 and the Fire TV Box 1 and 2. I want to do a big, you know, 4x4 kind of grid video roundup to kind of show off the gaming capabilities and which ones are good for which types of games. So hopefully I'll get that done next week. I've already started recording some of the video for that, so I haven't fully finished that yet. So what I did do this week was compare the temperatures of the Fire TV Stick 1 and the Fire TV Stick 2 to kind of see which one runs hotter, which one doesn't, which one dissipates heat better, which one doesn't, that sort of thing. I mostly did this because a lot of people are concerned who have the Fire TV Stick 1, that device kind of ran too hot and we're having problems. Some people reported overheating issues with the first gen Fire TV Stick. So this was one of the first tests that I wanted to do. So as you can see here, if you're watching the video version, I've got a nice little chart showing temperature readings, both internal and external. Of course, I'll put a link down in the show notes to this article and this chart, so those of you just listening to the audio version can definitely take a look at your leisure when you get a chance. So basically what I did was I wrote a little script that would pull the CPU of each device to actually read out what the CPU temperature was being reported by the operating system. And so I did that for the internal temperature. And then I figured I wanted to get a reading of the external temperature just to see how well that heat was being escaped from the device and was it, whether the device itself was, you know, feeling really hot or getting really hot on the outside. So for the external temperature, I picked up one of those little infrared laser thermometers that you kind of just point at a device, you know, pull the trigger and it gets a reading of what it's basically being pointed at. So basically my test consisted of me running the device for about 5 minutes or so, just idle, you know, booting them up, making sure they were both sitting there off at first, you know, so that they were both at room temperature and, you know, everything was even. So I let them sit idle for about 5 minutes and then I ran a stress test app, which basically spiked the CPU to 100% and just kept it there until basically I exited the app. And I ran that for about 5 or 6 minutes. And so as you can see here, the actual Fire TV Stick 2 runs at idle, I'd say about 10 degrees hotter than the Fire TV Stick 1. This is both for internal and external temperatures, both at the CPU and outside on the actual case itself. When it actually got into the stress test and the 100 CPU usage, that difference jumped up to around 20 to 25 degrees difference, where the Fire TV Stick was much hotter than the Fire TV Stick 1. I did expect the Fire TV Stick 2 to actually run hotter because it is that quad-core processor compared to the slower dual core processor on the Fire TV Stick 1, but it was a noticeably higher temperature. Thankfully though, the actual exterior temperature of the Fire TV Stick 2 was lower than the exterior temperature of the Fire TV Stick 1. My interpretation of that, which definitely can be argued, is that the Fire TV Stick 2 is actually dissipating the heat better than the Fire TV Stick 1. Now the reason I say that is because before starting the test, I was trying out a whole bunch of different stress testing apps just to see which one I would end up using. And so while I was doing that, I was trying to locate the hottest point of the actual device, you know, so that I would know where to point my little IR thermometer and so that I would get consistent readings. I actually put just a little piece of masking tape on the device so that I would always hit that same mark with the little laser pointer that the thermometer has. And so while doing that little pre-testing, I found that the actual Fire TV Stick 2 was generally more even temperatured across the entire device on the exterior, whereas the Fire TV Stick 1, it had a really high hot spot, you know, right where the CPU basically is behind it. And the rest of it was a lot cooler, you know. There was almost like a 15 or 20 degree even difference between the hottest point of the Fire TV Stick 1 and the coolest point of the Fire TV Stick 1 on the exterior. And so based on the fact that the Fire TV Stick 2 actually had lower exterior temperatures, even though it had higher interior temperatures, or not interior temperatures, it's just temperatures reported by the CPU. You know, that's like the maximum point. You know, the highest point is going to be right there at that CPU. And so because that Fire TV Stick 2 had those lower temperatures outside, higher temperatures inside at the CPU, my conclusion was that it basically was dissipating the heat a lot better, and so it didn't feel as hot to the touch, which I assume, you know, is going to be better for the longevity, you know, assuming my assumption is correct. So people commented on the article that I wrote interpreting my findings in a different way, where they felt that the lower exterior temperatures and the higher interior temperatures indicated that that heat was being trapped in the device. I personally don't think that's the case, but definitely it is a possibility. I just ran my little test here and I kind of, you know, interpreted it the way I think it is. I could absolutely be wrong, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, it's up to you to figure out what you think these readings mean. But, you know, the whole idea that the actual device is trapping in that heat and not, you know, that's why it's not getting hotter. You know, the case itself is not getting hotter. I mean, I don't really buy that. There's not that much air in there. There's not that much space for, you know, heat to be trapped. It's not like the thing is insulated where it's going to actually, you know, contain that heat. You know, if the CPU is putting out that heat, it's going to get transferred into that casing. There's nowhere else for it to go. You know, it's not going to just be locked in there. So the fact that the device wasn't getting hotter on the outside, even though it was getting much hotter, you know, at the actual CPU was producing a lot more heat there, you know, just to me tells me that the device is dissipating heat better. And I expect that because we already know that the Fire TV Stick 1, if you've got it crammed back there behind a TV and the TV is getting hot and your AV equipment is hot and there's no air flowing back there, you know, maybe it's in like a cabinet or something, or mounted up next to a wall or something where there's, you know, very limited airflow. We already know the Fire TV Stick 1 has issues there. So I expected Amazon to do a better job on the Fire TV Stick 2, to take what they learned from the Fire TV Stick 1 and improve on it from the Fire TV Stick 2. We'll see. You know, it's still early. The device has only been out a few weeks now, and so we'll have to see whether there are, you know, overheating issues. I did see in the comments somebody said that one of their devices, I think they ordered 3 devices, and one of them did end up overheating, you know, right off the bat, you know, without even like running anything. So it looked like that one had flaws in there and he swapped it out for a new one. So we'll have to see if there are any overheating issues related with Fire TV Stick 2 owners. But, you know, still early to tell, but, you know, these are my readings and you can kind of interpret them however you like. All right, next up, we've got a few more new images of the new upcoming Fire TV interface overhaul. If you recall from last week, I went over the home screen shots that we have and the actual TV show episode shots. And so if you missed that, definitely check out that last episode, and I'll put a link to those articles and those images down below, of course. But now we've got some new images that are concentrated more on apps and the actual apps section of the new Fire TV interface. So these new screenshots of the interface were actually posted on Amazon's developer website to kind of help developers understand what kind of icons they should be publishing with their apps and what kind of background images they should be publishing with these apps. So this wasn't Amazon actually releasing, you know, new images of all of the, you know, apps section. So we don't have a shot of the actual, like, My Apps section where you would see all of your installed apps. What we do have here, if you're watching the video version, the first shot that we have is of the featured apps screen, and this was posted so that developers could see how their apps would appear if they do get featured. And so you could see here from the actual screenshot, the very top one third or so is actually displaying information on the actual icon that's being highlighted on the screen. So below that one third, taking up about two thirds of the screen, are 2.5 rows of apps, the first one being labeled Editor's Picks, the second row being labeled Best New Apps and Games, and then the last one being labeled Trending. So it looks like there'll be inside of the actual app section a second section where you can go and look at featured apps, and that's what this screen appears to be. And so again, the app that's actually being highlighted, more information about that app, the title of it, the description of it, and a background image that the publisher has actually, you know, posted for that app is displayed in the top third. And I think this theme is going to be fairly common in the Fire TV interface, where whatever you're actually highlighting, whether it's a movie, whether it's an app, whether it's a TV show icon, you're going to have more information about the item that you're highlighting up at the top of the screen, as opposed to just highlighting different apps and having to actually click into them to actually read the description and see imagery related to that app. You actually get it there at the top while you're scrolling around. I actually presume that, you know, in this screenshot, if you imagine scrolling down the page, I presume that the top third that's actually telling you information about whatever you're highlighting will not scroll away, meaning that that top third is going to be dedicated to that information regardless of where you're navigating through that interface, or at least through this page. I don't know, again, what that My App section is going to look like. That one might have more of just a big grid of apps so that you can actually, you know, get to your apps quicker, because since you already have them installed, you don't really need the background image and the description and the title. So hopefully the actual My App section will be more of just a straightforward grid of apps. But wherever you're actually looking at, you know, shopping for an app, you know, looking in the app store, essentially, I assume we're going to have that top third show more information. The next image we have that was released on the developer site is a shot of the actual app icon itself. So the new app icons, we already know, are not going to be squares like they are on the current Fire TV interface. They're going to be these rectangles, you know, basically a 1280 by 720 resolution rectangular icons. And so Amazon has actually published this shot of all the different overlay icons that can appear on an app's icon. And by overlay icons, I mean, as you can see here, if you're watching the video version, at the bottom, there's like a download bar. For example, when you're actually downloading the app, that a little bar will be overlaid at the very bottom of the icon. There's also the text that says downloading dot, dot, dot. And I assume when the app finishes downloading and it's installing, that text will probably likely change to installing like the way it is on the current Fire TV interface. Up in the right, there's a little cloud, and that would probably indicate whether the app was actually installed on your device or whether it was just stored in your account, you know, in the cloud, meaning you've downloaded it or purchased it in the past, but it's currently not installed. So that little cloud icon indicates that. Again, similar to the actual current Fire TV interface. What is different from the current Fire TV interface, though, is that in the upper left corner of the apps, we're seeing here a label that says new and also a label that says UHD. And so it looks like in the new interface, apps that are new are going to be labeled with a little new icon, and apps that are 4K capable are going to be labeled with a little UHD icon. Not sure if the new indicates, you know, you newly installed the app, so it's letting you know this is the new app that you just installed, or whether it's like a new app in the actual, you know, Fire TV app store, and so it's labeling an app that way. But, you know, just give us a glimpse, a better idea of what this new interface is gonna be. I really like the little UHD symbol to let you know which apps are capable of 4K. Next up, we've got a shot of what the actual, you know, I call the product page essentially for an app is going to look like. So if you're actually browsing the actual Fire TV app store on the device itself and you click into an app and you want to read up a little bit more about the app, see the price, see screenshots, see trailers, that's what this screen is going to be. And so at the top, you've got the actual title of the app. And then below that, you've got the star rating of the app, how many reviews have been left for that app, the actual parental guidance suggested for the app, and whether it has in-app purchases. Then below that, you've got the price, both in dollars and in coins. And then below that, it tells you how many coins you've got. And so you can, I assume, hit those buttons to actually, you know, make the purchase or make the download there. Then below that information, you've got trailers and screenshots, you know, so it's just a row, a horizontally scrolling row of all the images for that app, similar to the new interface. And at the very bottom of the screen, we see a little glimpse of a row of apps that are labeled customers also bought. So it looks like recommendations for other apps that are related to the app that you're looking at. And then in the background of this entire screen is a big full screen size background image that the developer themselves upload, and that is used as a backdrop for this like product page for the app itself. Here, if you're watching the video version and confused why there's an Amazon Music app being listed as $4.99 or $499 coins, remember, this is just kind of like a demo screen that Amazon has put onto their developer page. So they're not going to actually be charging $4.99 for their music app. That's going to come pre-installed on Fire TVs, just as it is right now. And then in the background of the screen is a full screen background image used as a backdrop for the entire page that is actually uploaded by the developer themselves. The last new image that Amazon has posted is a shot of what the home screen would look like if an actual video trailer was playing in place of the actual, you know, banner advertisement stuff at the very top. So we know the home screen is going to have a little strip banner at the top, just like the existing Fire TV home screen has. But under that is going to be like featured content. And based on this image, it looks like that featured content will kind of scroll through different things, kind of like what you see on the homepage of Amazon.com. And so that featured content could be videos. We're not sure if it's going to autoplay videos or you're going to have to click in to play the videos. I'd be shocked if there was auto playing audio. I doubt that, but maybe something might start playing muted, and then if you wanted to select it to actually listen or watch it full screen or something like that, that would happen. But they're displaying this because they are going to be featuring apps in that screen. Even though here we have actual the Bosch TV show being shown here, that they put this in the actual development page so that app developers who want to submit an actual video trailer for their app, Amazon might actually take those and actually feature them on the home screen, or maybe even feature them on the app section. I'm not sure. We don't know if the app section is going to have a similar banner at the top. But yeah, that's the new images for the new upcoming Fire TV interface. As I mentioned last week, this new interface is going to come to the Fire TV Stick 2 first, then the Fire TV 2, and then it's going to roll out to the Fire TV 1 and the Fire TV Stick 1. All of that's supposed to happen later this year. We still don't know exactly when that's going to happen. I assume it's going to come in a software update, over-the-air software update, not in a system app update in the background. So we'll have to wait and see when that actually comes. But so far, I'm liking it. So far, it's looking pretty good, pretty slick. I like it more so than the existing Fire TV interface. I'm just hoping there's a little bit more customization than the existing Fire TV interface. I do know on the home screen, Amazon said you'll be able to actually customize at least one of those rows of apps to actually, you know, manually select which apps appear in that row so you can easily get to the apps that you want to get to the most. All right, next up, let's talk about a little odd thing that's been happening to Fire TVs and Fire TV sticks in the last 24 hours or so. So people are finding that their devices, pretty much all of the Fire TVs and Fire TV sticks that are associated with their account, are being spontaneously deregistered, meaning they're being deactivated and removed from their actual Amazon account. This actually happened to me myself yesterday morning. I sat at my desk to start writing some new articles, turned on one of my devices and saw that it was sitting on the registration screen where it was asking me to log into my Amazon account. And I went in and looked into my Your Devices section of Amazon.com's website and saw that pretty much all of my Amazon Fire TVs and Fire TV sticks, except for the newest one that I registered, which was the Fire TV Stick 2, all of the rest were actually removed from my account. Me personally, I counted 12 Fire TVs and Fire TV sticks associated with my account. I don't use all of these actively. I just keep them basically for testing purposes. I like to have different states of devices. You know, I like to have of every generation of device. I like to have a rooted one, a non-rooted one. I like to have one on the newest software version and one on the older software version, just so that I can always test things out and compare things and, you know, do things that I need to do with the devices. That's why I have so many of them. But when it first happened to me, I kind of just thought it was some fluke, so I didn't really think much of it. But then I started getting contacted by people who noticed that this happened to them as well. One person who contacted me said they had 14 or so Fire TVs and Fire TV sticks associated with their account that they had like given to their family members, you know, different family members, different homes were using them under that same account. And so he said all of those got deregistered. Another person who was actually a Fire TV stick reseller, one of the people who actually takes them, loads them with like software, most likely pirated software, but I didn't ask him if that's what he does, but I assume that's what he does. But he loads them with that software and then resells them. But he actually has them registered with like dummy Amazon accounts, basically accounts that he created that don't have like addresses or credit cards associated with them. You know, probably something that's against Amazon's terms. But he said three different accounts with about 8 to 10 devices registered to each one. He said all of those devices got deregistered. And on top of that, his three Amazon accounts actually got closed. So they actually closed down those accounts, most likely because they detected that strange activity and the fact that he probably doesn't use those accounts for anything other than registering and reselling those Fire TV sticks. So because everybody that I've spoken with who actually had this happen to them actually had a high number of devices associated with their accounts, you know, higher than usual, higher than your average person would likely have. You know, I have 12 devices, which is much higher than probably your average household, you know, because I'm in an odd situation where I do a lot of writing and do a lot of testing on these devices. But I suspect that the reason these devices are being deregistered is not an accident or is not a bug. I suspect it is deliberate by Amazon. I have no confirmation on that whatsoever. It's completely speculation on my part. I did reach out to Amazon to ask why this is happening. They said they were going to look into it and get back to me. At this time, they have not gotten back to me just yet, but I definitely will update my article, which I'll link down below, of course, if I hear back from them and see what they have to say about it. But personally, I suspect they're going through and finding accounts that actually have a large number of devices registered to them and basically deregistering all those devices because they want to kind of thwart the reselling of Fire TV sticks and Fire TVs, you know, mostly to stop that reputation of the devices being used for piracy and being resold with all those piracy apps and add-ons. The good news is that if it does happen to you and your device does get deregistered, all of your apps, all of your settings, you know, everything is still there on the device. You literally, all you have to do is go in, log back in with your Amazon account, and then everything is back to normal. Everything is working the way it was. I think it's more so just so that it's an inconvenience for those who are selling, you know, an unusual amount of Fire TV sticks and Fire TVs, you know, on eBay and places like that. You know, a lot of them leave those devices registered with some bogus Amazon account so that when somebody buys it from them, they can just plug it in and it works right off the bat and they don't have to wonder, you know, how did they get to the content? Because, you know, a lot of these people who are buying these, I assume, are not that intelligent as far as actually, you know, being techie and all that stuff. So if they have to actually do something to get to their pirated content, it's probably too much work for them. I personally actually just went on to Amazon's customer service chat and actually told them that this is what happened to mine, and they actually went into my account and re-registered all of them and all at once in one fell swoop, so I didn't actually have to log in to my devices manually. I did have to restart them again because the ones that were already left on and they were sitting on that, you know, login screen, they did not automatically log themselves back in. But when I restarted them, they were able to log in. So if this does happen to you, it is just a slight inconvenience. But I can see why Amazon is doing it. Hopefully they do a better job of figuring out which ones they should do this to and which ones they shouldn't. Hopefully it hasn't affected too many of you who legitimately just, you know, have a lot of devices that you're using and are not like resellers or anything like that. All right, next up, for those of you who have purchased the Fire TV Stick 2, I did want to briefly mention that the promo emails are starting to roll out. If you recall, when the Fire TV Stick 2 was announced, I mentioned in that episode that Amazon was having a promotion where if you bought the Fire TV Stick 2 and you actually activated it or registered it before October 31st, you would get an email with quote up to $65 worth of, you know, free promotional content. Basically, what you get is a month of Sling TV for free. You get 2 months of Hulu for free, and you get, which I think is the most useful thing out of this pack, is a $10 Amazon Video credit, which you can use to either buy or rent anything you want through Amazon Video. So I definitely did want to mention it to those of you who bought the Fire TV Stick 2 to check your email, make sure you don't miss out on that. The Amazon $10 credit, you have to actually click a link to have it applied to your account, and you have to do that before November 15th or else that link will become invalid. Then when you do that, you have until December 15th to actually use that $10 credit. So if you did buy a Fire TV Stick 2, be sure to check that email, click that link, and be sure to use that credit before December 15th or else you're going to miss out on that. All right, next up, let's get into some Fire TV app news. First up, probably most notable from this last week, is the release of a new file manager app called File Commander. This app is very similar to ES File Explorer, and I think, in my opinion, probably better in most situations than ES File Explorer. It does basically the stuff you would expect a file manager to do. You can access your internal / SD card storage on the Fire TV. You can copy files, move files around. You can delete files and that sort of stuff. You can, of course, access external storage also, either from a micro SD card or a USB drive. I like the interface of this app much better than ES File Explorer. For those of you who have used ES File Explorer, which is pretty much the most popular Fire TV app in the Fire TV App Store that's not a video app, mostly because people use it for that sideloading purpose, because it has the ability to actually download files from the internet from a little like rudimentary browser. But for those of you who have done that, for those of you who have used ES File Explorer, you'll know the interface is definitely not tailored for a Fire TV device necessarily with a remote control. It's much more tailored for actual touch interface or mouse control interface, but you usually can get around with just the remote. There are still some of those pitfalls with this File Commander app that are similar to ES File Explorer, where you're kind of moving around a highlighter icon around the screen to get to the screen elements that you want, where normally you would just tap directly on those or click directly on those with a mouse. but it is slightly better, you know, than ES File Explorer, so that's why I do prefer it. One nice feature it has that ES File Explorer also has, but that it's always never really worked for me well with ES File Explorer. That's why, again, I like File Commander a little bit better, is it has the ability to actually connect to cloud accounts. It supports Amazon Cloud Drive, Google Drive, Box, SugarSync, and Microsoft OneDrive. So you can log into those accounts and actually access those files from the cloud. So if you wanted, you could, for example, put, you know, APKs that you sideload often in one of those cloud drives, and then anytime you get a new Fire TV device or something, you could just log into that drive and just, you know, download and install APK files directly that way. So the app does fully support installing third-party APKs through the app itself, you know, if you enable apps from unknown sources in the Fire TV interface. So if you either have a APK file sitting on the drive itself, or you download one from the internet or something like that by the cloud drives, you can actually just click it from within the app, and then it'll pop up with the install dialog like you'd normally expect. The one nice thing I liked about the cloud service in this app is that the Amazon Cloud Drive support that it has, you actually don't have to log into the actual Amazon account from within the app itself. It actually is capable of pulling in your actual login credentials from the Fire TV itself. So the account that you're actually logged into, the Amazon account on the Fire TV, is the account that this app will just end up using. You know, you just have to basically grant it permission to access your cloud drive, and you can just get right in. So if you store something in your cloud drive, you can easily access it from within this app. The last feature of this app that I'll mention is its ability to connect to a PC and do file transfers that way, and actually it allows you to manage files on the actual Fire TV device itself from a PC or from a mobile phone's browser. So basically from within the app, you go in and you start the PC service, and then it will display an IP address with a port number that's associated with your Fire TV. If you punch that in directly into the URL field of any browser, either on a mobile device or on a PC, you'll actually get a little interface that lets you actually see the files on your Fire TV, move them around, delete them, upload files, download files. So it's very handy. You know, ES File Explorer has a similar feature, but it's never worked that well, and not nearly as well as File Commander's smoother interface here. I'm realizing right now that I'm really selling this app pretty hard, but I do want to definitely say I'm not associated in any way with this app. They did not contact me ahead of time or anything like that to talk to me about this app. I'm not getting anything for talking about this. I just legitimately think it's a better file browser, file manager for the Fire TV than ES File Explorer. It definitely does not have the feature where you can, you know, load a website and actually download files from the internet through the actual File Commander app itself. So ES File Explorer definitely still has that capability there that this app does not have. So if you've been using ES File Explorer to actually download and sideload APK files without having to use a secondary device, definitely that is still the way to go. File Commander doesn't have that capability yet. I actually emailed the developers after I wrote this article telling them that if they added that feature, I bet you this app would become even more popular on the Fire TV. And so they actually told me that they'll pass that along to their development team. So we'll see if they actually ever add that capability. The app itself does have a kind of browser built in, but it's only a browser to get to its help section, its help pages. I noticed that it's pulling those from the internet, so it is kind of like a web browser. So it really would just take a little bit more development to actually add the capability to actually just enter a URL and be able to actually, you know, view a website through the app. So hopefully they do add that, you know, having more options for sideloading, you know, built into the actual Amazon Fire TV's app store, or available from Amazon's Fire TV app store, is always a good thing. So right now we've only got ES File Explorer. That's really the only way that you can get files sideloaded onto the Fire TV without having any other external device. No PC required, no smartphone required, no external storage required. All right, the next app I'll talk about is a new Comedy Central app that was released this week. It's a pretty nice, pretty decent app. If you look down in the show notes, you'll find a link that'll take you to this article where I kind of did my usual review of the app, showing all the different sections and what it has to offer. This app does require you to log in with a cable provider to activate the app and have access to all the content that's available within the app. But there's about at least one episode or so from almost all of the shows that are available in this app that you can watch for free without actually having to log in or activate the app or anything like that. Regardless of whether you are logged in and activated or whether you're just, you know, using it as a free app, there are going to be advertisements, either both pre-roll ads and actual, you know, while you're watching an episode or video within the actual app, you'll have ads that way. So do expect to see those. But the app has your usual area. So it has like a home screen kind of where it has all of the featured content, you know, where it shows new episodes and a little bit of all of the different content you can find within the app. Then it has a dedicated section for all of the different TV shows in there. I think there are about 37 different TV shows available through the app right now. And then it has the actual dedicated section for stand-up specials within the app. Unfortunately, none of these stand-up specials were available for free. You had to activate the app to watch any of the stand-up specials, but it did have them in there. Those are more, you know, longer things than actual TV shows. And then it had a nice section that it called the Me section, where you actually were able to star different TV shows within the app as favorites, and those would appear in this Me section. And then also in that Me section was an area showing all of the different shows and episodes that you started watching but didn't finish watching. I really like this section. The TV show networks that release streaming apps, you know, never really add any kind of customization to the apps. It's always just like, here's the app. Everybody sees the same exact interface. But, you know, having the ability to actually kind of tailor the app for yourself. If you're a big Comedy Central fan, you can put in the shows that you just want to watch and be able to get to the shows that you were watching recently pretty easily. All right, moving on. Next up in app news, I wanted to briefly mention that Grand Theft Auto 3 and Grand Theft Auto Vice City have actually just added support for the new Fire TV Stick 2. So when the Fire TV Stick 2 first came out, it actually had about 200 or so more games that you could play on it than the Fire TV Stick 1, and that kind of showed off its more powerful gaming capabilities. But the Grand Theft Auto games were all missing from that device. But now Rockstar has actually added support for GTA 3 and GTA Vice City. They haven't added GTA San Andreas yet. I'm hoping they do, but San Andreas is kind of the most intense, you know, newest GTA game that's available on the Fire TV boxes. And so if anything, it would probably require the most capabilities out of the device, so we might not see that ever added to the actual Fire TV Stick 2. But for those of you who do have the Fire TV Stick 2, did want to mention that, you know, you have access to the GTA games now on the device, which are some of the most popular games on there. And lastly, I did want to mention this new game called Cyboid. It's actually on sale this week. It just came out this week too. Normally goes for $7.49. It's currently on sale for $3.99. The developer actually contacted me and thanked me for writing this little article about their site. And basically they said that this is kind of like a promotion because they just released their app. It's actually a little team of two guys. The game is similar to the older high-speed Quake games, if you guys are familiar with those. Basically, first-person shooter, very high-speed. Looks pretty fun. I haven't tried it yet myself, but definitely check it out. I'll put a link down in the show notes, of course, to all of the apps that I've been talking about, so you guys can get to them from there if you're interested in learning more. All right, next up, like I promised last week, I wanted to talk about the new Echo Dot. I got it in last week, but did not get a chance to mess with it or try it out just yet because I was so busy messing with the Fire TV Stick 2. I was also just as busy this week, but I did get a chance to play with it, to use it, to kind of compare it to the first-gen Echo Dot. All right, so first up, let me switch here into full screen mode and show off the actual device itself. So here it is. You probably already seen it. There's not too much to see that's different. You got the Amazon logo on the front. On the back, you've got the micro USB power port. You've got a 3.5mm jack, which I'll talk about in a little bit. And then at the top here, you've got your regular buttons. You've got your microphone mute button, your microphone use button. If you don't want to actually use the Alexa trigger command, you can actually just hit that button to actually start talking to Alexa. And then you've got your volume up down buttons. All right, comparing it here to the first generation Echo Dot in black and the second gen in white, you can see it's just a little bit shorter than the other one. Basically the exact same actual, like, you know, radius, diameter, size, pretty much identical there. The two can stack on each other pretty easily. The two are very similar devices. Biggest difference really is that you can see at the top, the new Echo Dot 2 has the four buttons. The first gen Echo Dot has just the two buttons. That's because the volume on the first gen Echo Dot is actually done by a spinning wheel at the top here. It's probably hard to see in the video, but this whole top rim actually spins, and that's how you control the volume, very similar to the actual full size Echo But they actually changed that. So it's just the up down volume buttons on the Echo Dot 2. The device itself is also a lot lighter. So the Echo Dot 1 is a much heavier device, mostly because it needs that weight so that when it's actually sitting on a tabletop and you spin the actual volume control, it doesn't spin the entire device itself. So, you know, it actually has that weight to it. The bottom is actually very sticky also, so it actually helps that too. But, you know, you don't need that weight so much with the second gen Echo Dot, because, you know, again, you're just pressing those volume buttons at the top. So functionally, it's pretty much identical to the first gen Echo Dot. I'll put a link down in the show notes to my podcast episode and my articles about the first gen Echo Dot, because basically if you're considering the Echo Dot and want to hear more about what I think about just Echo Dot in general, definitely look there. I'm not going to repeat myself just because I've already talked in depth about the Echo Dot in general and its functionality. But yeah, it's pretty much identical, except it's about half the price. You know, the new Echo Dot is $49.99, whereas the old one was $89.99. The old one does feel a little bit more premium. You know, this is not, I don't think it's metal. I think it's still plastic on the old Echo Dot, but definitely just seems like a more premium product, whereas the new one is a high gloss plastic. It definitely looks nice. I was expecting it to feel a little cheaper than the new Echo Dot that is. But it's definitely, you know, just as nice. The first gen Echo Dot has actually this soft plastic at the top, similar to the first gen Fire TV remote control, the premium remote control on the first gen Fire TV, whereas the new one just has the smooth plastic. But again, does not feel cheap, does not feel, you know, like it's going to break or anything like that. Definitely, you know, at half the price or nearly half the price, definitely a big improvement there. I will definitely take personally the cheaper quality of the actual, you know, exterior casing and the lack of spinning volume wheel for, you know, a savings of $40 there. The new Echo Dot 2 comes with the exact same power adapter as the Echo Dot 1 does. It's a 9-watt power adapter. It's different, even though it looks very similar to the Fire TV Stick 2's power adapter. It is different. It is a little bit longer. That Fire TV Stick 2 comes with a 5-watt power adapter. This one is a 9-watt power adapter, so a little bit different. And also comes, of course, with the USB, micro USB cable that you use to actually, you know, plug in and power the device. If I recall, the Echo Dot 1 came with an actual auxiliary 3.5 millimeter cable to use with it, but the Echo Dot 2 does not come with one, so you'll definitely need to pick one up there. But I kind of have the same gripe that I have with the Echo Dot 1, I do have with the Echo Dot 2, because nothing has changed there as far as how it connects to devices, how it works with Alexa, and how the voice commands work. That gripe is that if you have the device connected with a 3.5 millimeter wired connection to speakers, those speakers have to be on for you to interact with the Echo Dot. You cannot listen or talk to Alexa on the Echo Dot's internal built-in speaker if you have it connected with a wired connection. That's why I still recommend the Echo Dot be used ideally with a Bluetooth speaker. So when you're connected with a Bluetooth speaker, both with the Echo Dot 2 and the Echo Dot 1, you can actually just tell Alexa to disconnect from Bluetooth. That way you can use the internal speaker without actually having to physically do anything. So if you have your Echo Dot sitting there and it's synced up with some Bluetooth speakers that are like in another room, or you can't get to them or something like that, and you want to actually use the Echo Dot from just the internal built-in tiny speaker, you could just say, Alexa, disconnect Bluetooth. It'll disconnect. And then you could just, you know, say out your command, and that'll go through the actual internal speaker. And then at any point when you actually want to connect to your nicer speakers, you could just say, Alexa, connect Bluetooth. And then that will connect your actual, you know, Echo Dot to your better speakers. Yeah, so that's pretty much it. You know, thankfully Amazon did not, you know, make the device any worse by reducing the price as much as they did. It's just as functional, just as usable. You know, it hears you just as well. I tried to do a test where I had them on either ends of the room, and I was doing the whole spatial thing where if you got closer to one, that's the one that would reply, and if you got closer to the other one, that was the one that would reply. And I did not notice that any one of them heard me less, you know, easily than the first gen Echo Dot, or even the full size Amazon Echo. So you know, nice to see there that, you know, you're not losing any functionality or anything like that. It's just that the build materials have changed, and they basically just figured out how to manufacture them less expensively than previously with the more premium, you know, housing of the first gen Echo Dot. We have a question here from Jackal Dancer on Twitter about the Echo Dot 2. He says, does your Echo Dot 2 LED have ambient lighting? I remember he mentioned this last week, and I totally forgot to actually test it. But according to Jackal Dancer, he says that the device itself does actually detect the light level in your room, and so when it actually like wakes up and actually lights up the ring around it, that light is actually dimmer than it is. If the room is dark, then that light is kind of dim. But if the room is bright, that light is bright. I haven't gotten to test it myself, so I don't know for sure. I can't confirm that is actually the case. But looking at it right now, I actually do realize that there is a little hole at the top where it could theoretically have an actual, light sensor and actually realize that. So I don't doubt that it has that feature, which is actually pretty nice. Because like when you mute the device itself by actually pressing this little mute button, that basically mutes Alexa's abilities to hear you and respond from you, it actually lights up the entire ring red. And so if that was really super bright at night, I can see how that can get annoying. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it does have that little ambient lighting feature, but really sorry that I didn't get a chance or forgot to actually test that. All right, moving on, we've actually got a little bit more Alexa news to talk about. So Logitech, creators of the Harmony universal remote that a lot of Fire TV owners like to use, has just put out their official Alexa skill that allows you to actually control your Harmony remote through an Echo Dot or an Echo or basically any Alexa-enabled device. So this new skill is actually not adding that much functionality to the actual Harmony remotes, because a lot of the capabilities of this new skill you were able to achieve through like third-party services like If This Then That. Some of the things you can do with the skill is to turn on and off your TV. So you could just say, Alexa, turn on my TV, or Alexa, turn off my TV. And through that skill, Alexa would just start working and connect basically over the internet to the actual remote itself and turn on your TV. The other thing you can actually do with this new Alexa skill is actually turn on and turn off activities that you've created on your Harmony remote. And so activities allow you to kind of chain different events into one command. And so you can have like a movie night activity that will, dim your lights, for example, because the Harmony remotes can actually connect, or the Harmony hub actually can connect to smart devices like Philips Hue lights and thermostats and that sort of stuff. And so you can actually set an activity where you can, set a certain temperature, dim the lights, turn on your TV, do that sort of stuff, and actually just activate all of that just by a voice command through Alexa now. The other nice thing that the skill does is if you actually have a cable subscription and the Harmony is able to detect that cable subscription, you can actually say different channels to jump into those channels. So you can say something like, Alexa, turn on ESPN, and the remote itself will actually turn on your TV and go directly to the ESPN channel that is in your cable box that it actually detects. Harmony has also added limited support with Roku devices. So if you say, Alexa, turn on Netflix, it will actually launch the Netflix app on the Roku devices. And so it hasn't unfortunately added Fire TV support just yet. The Harmony remotes do support the Fire TV. They can connect to those over Bluetooth and actually control those that way. But unfortunately, you can't do that direct app launching through the Echo or the Echo Dot through the remote just yet. But hopefully they add that soon in the future. This skill is still just kind of like a first step, in my opinion. Again, it doesn't really add any functionality that you couldn't already do in other ways through Harmony remotes and Alexa devices. But hopefully, it's just the first step, and we'll see it expanded in the near future. The other Alexa news from this week is that Alexa is starting to roll out to Fire tablets now, finally. So when Amazon announced their all new Fire HD 8 tablet about a month or two ago, they announced that tablet would bring Alexa to mobile devices, and those mobile devices are their line of Fire tablets. And so that rollout is starting this week. So you can actually, if you get the update, press and hold the home button on one of your Fire tablets, Fire HD 8 and Fire HD 10. Those are the ones that we know for sure will support the new Alexa abilities on them. Not sure if older tablets are going to support them as well. But if you press and hold the home button, it'll actually trigger Alexa on the tablet. You can speak your command and actually just have it execute there. All of the Alexa skills, including the Harmony remote skill that I was just talking about, are supported on the tablets themselves also. So you have access to all of that. And in addition to actual the voice commands, you actually do get to see cards similar to how you see them on the Fire TV when you talk to Alexa on tablets. So if you ask for the weather on a tablet, for example, you'll see a little card that shows you more information about the weather. So nice little new feature rolling out to Amazon's Fire tablets soon. If you haven't gotten it yet, you'll probably get it in the next week or so. All right, and the last thing I'll talk about before moving into the Q&A section is this little bit of news from Apple and the Apple TV. You know, I like to cover all the big popular streaming boxes and Apple TVs and Rokus and Android TVs and all those. So whenever there's a significant change or significant update, I do like to mention it briefly here on the episode. So Apple had an event yesterday, and they basically announced a new app called just simply called TV that they're releasing for the Apple TV and for iOS devices like their tablets and their smartphones. And basically what this app is, it's an aggregator for all the different streaming services that they work with. So similar to what you see on the Chromecast app and the Fire TV interface, what this TV app from Apple does is essentially any service, any streaming service that you have activated or you've logged in with, you know, like HBO and Hulu and CBS and that sort of stuff, you'll actually see all the different content that's available through those services in this one app. But very similar to the Chromecast, very similar to the Fire TV, when you actually tap some TV show or some movie within the app, it actually launches the individual apps themselves and you watch the content through the app there. You don't actually watch the content within the TV app itself. In my opinion, more so than anything, this new app from Apple kind of signifies that they've kind of given up on that rumored streaming TV service that, you know, basically about a year ago or so, there were big rumors that they were working on, you know, some kind of like Sling TV competitor. But because they've kind of released this app where it, you know, it is basically aggregating other apps and other services into the actual Apple TV interface, it kind of tells me they're not so much going to create their own service anymore. They want to help you discover services from other apps themselves. And really, more so than anything, this app is probably a home screen replacement for the Apple TV itself, because Apple TV's remote, they actually remapped the TV button to where if you're actually launch this app and then you go and watch something, you know, through this app, and this app actually redirects you and you watch something, pressing the home button on the remote of the Apple TV will jump you back into this app and not back into the actual Apple TV's home interface. So yeah, that tells me, you know, that this app is kind of meant to be where you spend most of your time on the Apple TV. It doesn't really add anything that the Fire TV doesn't have. You know, it's bringing the Apple TV up closer to the Fire TV itself. One big thing that this app is missing is Netflix support. So Netflix is nowhere to be found in this app. And for those of you obviously with Fire TVs, know well that Netflix took a long time for it to be integrated into the Fire TV's interface. You know, that came last month. So now when you search within the Fire TV's interface, you can actually find Netflix content directly and start playing Netflix content directly from the Fire TV's interface. You cannot do the same with this Apple TV app. So, you know, little baby steps for the Apple TV to kind of catch up with the Fire TV, in my opinion, in that sense, to actually be less, you know, iTunes centric. You know, most Apple TV owners, I imagine, are basically just using them for iTunes and for Netflix. And so now you have this app that helps you get into other services. And I assume that Netflix is going to integrate eventually into this app. All right, let's move on to the Q&A section. As always, I put a post up on Thursdays asking people to submit their questions for me to try to answer here on the actual podcast episode. I also take episodes live. I stream live every Fridays at 11 a.m. Pacific. And so people can tweet me questions live. So we've already got a couple questions here from Twitter. First question is from Aaron Essence. They're asking, is there any advantage to Amazon in deregistering devices to discover how many are still active and in use? Absolutely not. Pretty much Amazon can realize which devices are still active, which devices are still in use, just immediately by you powering them on. You know, one of the very first things your Fire TV does is actually ping Amazon servers, and it does that to actually figure out whether it actually has an internet connection or not. And that ping to the servers is enough for Amazon to know whether a device is being used or which device is being used, because I assume that within that ping is information about the specific device itself, the serial number, and that sort of stuff. So yeah, no, Amazon would absolutely not need to deregister a device and have it activated just for them to know whether, you know, just like to poll the audience, essentially to know how many devices are active. They can figure that out immediately at any point, you know, without doing anything on their end. All right, next question here is from Twitter. We've got from Damien. He says, do you think Amazon will start a replacement upgrade program to swap our old Echoes or Sticks for new ones? They pretty much already have a program like that. Amazon has a device technology trade-in program, basically, where you can kind of sell your devices to Amazon. I assume they kind of take them, refurbish them, or reuse them in some way. And the whole program is actually not limited to the devices they manufacture themselves. So it's not just Fire TVs and Echoes and tablets and that sort of stuff. You can actually sell back, or not even back. You don't even have to have purchased it from Amazon. You can sell them basically old smartphones and pretty much a whole bunch of different devices. I'll put a link down in the show notes to the page where they offer this service. You can actually go in and just like put in the device you have, put in the quality of the device, basically, like, you know, does it have a lot of scratches or is it relatively in good condition? And they'll give you a little estimate of how much they'll give you for the device. So they've already got some kind of program like that. I don't think they'll be releasing any kind of like Amazon specific hardware turn in program, you know, or anything like that. You know, Amazon has been in the market of making hardware for probably over a decade now, at the very least, you know, with the very first Kindle coming back out way back then. And I don't think they've ever had a very specific, you know, Amazon only, you know, turn in exchange program. All right, next question we've got here from Rex. He's asking, if you use the display calibration function to adjust the Fire TV output for your television, is it working harder to remap the image than it would be to leave it uncalibrated? So I assume Rex is asking this question because of what we discussed last week, where the new Fire TV Stick 2 has removed the option to actually rescale the display video output that comes out of it. I saw some people commenting how that could be because the device, you know, like Rex is asking about, uses less resources because it doesn't have to rescale that video. I don't know the answer to this question. I tried to actually test it myself this week, but it's difficult to actually test because that recalibration has not been added back into the Fire TV Stick 2. You know, if I had two Fire TV Stick 2 devices, one where that recalibration software was available and one where it wasn't, I could maybe test to see if that was the case. I tried testing it on the Fire TV Stick 1, where on one device I calibrated and shrunk the screen, and on another one I left it, you know, no calibration. I didn't notice any performance difference. I ran benchmarks. I didn't see any difference there. So it's really hard to say. So yeah, my hunch is that it does not make a difference. You know, that recalibration or it shrinking the screen does not really add a lot of overhead to the CPU or anything like that, you know, but this is just a guess. Next question here is from Master Blaster 96. He says, does the new Fire TV Stick only allow private listening using Bluetooth, or does the audio port in the Fire TV wireless game controller work? I did test this myself. I meant to actually write a little article, just kind of like an FYI article, but no. The actual headphone jack on the Fire TV game controller does not work with the second gen Fire TV Stick. So only the Fire TV 2 box works with the headphone jack on the Fire TV game controller itself. But yeah, Bluetooth headphones do fully work on all of the Fire TV Sticks and Fire TVs, both Gen 1 and Gen 2. Our next question we've got here from FTV Paul. He's asking about the whole deregistering thing. This question I assume was posted before I wrote my article about what's going on with the whole Fire TV devices being just spontaneously deregistered. There's a little discussion here going on about trying to figure out which devices are affected, if it's limited to the UK or not in the UK or in the US. I will say that it doesn't look like it has to do with actual devices themselves. I think it has more so to do with your Amazon account itself. So I think characteristics related to the Amazon account are what are causing the devices to be deregistered. You know, mine is the biggest example. I have every, you know, category of Fire TV device you could think of, every generation of device, every, you know, rooted, non-rooted, side-loaded apps, non-side-loaded apps. It does not matter. All of my devices got deregistered pretty much, except for that first new second-gen device. And somebody here in the comments did say their second-gen Fire TV Stick did get deregistered. So it absolutely doesn't seem like it has anything to do whether you have side-loaded apps, whether your device is rooted or not. I think it has mostly to do with the number of devices you have registered to your Amazon account. Somebody here in the comments said they have 8 Fire TV 2s, a Fire TV 1, and 2 Fire TV Stick 1s, and their account got deregistered. And more so than anything, again, the unusually high number of devices associated with the account seems to be the biggest thing in common with those who are affected by this issue. Our next question here is from Scott. He asked, does the Fire TV Stick 2 support EXT4 file systems via USB OTG? He says, you mentioned in a post that it supported FAT32 and you were unsure, doubtful about NTFS support. Yeah, I did not test this out myself. I didn't get a chance this week to test the NTFS support explicitly, but yeah, I assume it does not have that support. And same goes for EXT4 file systems. I assume it does not have that support as well, but I will try to test that in the coming week. All right, next question here is from Bert. He's asking about the new music app on the Fire TV. He says that when he's within another app and he presses the play button, if he had something paused previously in the music app, it starts to play in the background even though he's within another app. He's asking if there's a solution to this. Yeah, this is actually intended behavior because the idea is that you're supposed to be able to use and listen to music in the background while you're inside of another app. Third-party media apps are supposed to be able to actually take over audio control. So if they have video playing, that won't actually happen. But if you're just browsing through the app and you actually hit a play button, it does play in the background. The only solution I know to this is to actually go into the Fire TV settings menu, go into the manage app section, scroll down to music and force close the app. If you force close the app and even probably clear the cache, it will actually forget that you actually had that music paused. And so when you actually play the pause button or play button on your remote, it doesn't actually, you know, start up that music. Our next question from Mike is about running a media server on the Fire TV One itself. He says his NAS is not powerful enough to do the transcoding. He's wondering if the Fire TV One could do it if it had the right software. No, I do not know of any media server software that can run on a Fire TV One or two. I don't know if the boxes are actually, you know, capable of that or actually have the hardware horsepower capable of that. I know the NVIDIA Shield is actually the only box I know that can actually do transcoding and run as a server for Plex on the device itself. And that's pretty much because that box has that gaming horsepower to actually push that transcoding. But yeah, no, sorry, the Fire TV 1 or 2, I don't know of any software that can actually run on the box itself that can do this transcoding locally. Our next question is from Gazdaman. He's saying, if as suspected, there appears to be no Fire TV 3 in the near future, what are the best options for an upgrade for the Fire TV 2? I'd say if you're looking to upgrade to something more powerful than the Fire TV 2, the NVIDIA Shield that I was just talking about is probably your best bet. It's an Android TV box. I personally haven't tried the Roku Ultra yet, which is supposed to be a 4K HDR device. So if you're looking for HDR support or if you're looking for 4K at 60 frames per second, that Roku Ultra might be a good option. But those two are probably your options there. The Mi Box itself, I haven't fully done a head-to-head comparison just yet, but just using it myself, I did pick one up. I would say that the Fire TV 2 is on par, if not just a little bit better than that Mi Box as far as performance goes. Gazdaman is also asking if you can store the photos for the Fire TV screensaver on a micro SD card to offload some of that internal storage. No, unfortunately, that is not possible, though those photos have to be stored internally. Next question is from Gygus. He's asking, how does Kodi on the Fire TV compare to SPMC? He'd like to see a comparison feature list. He says the only difference he's noticed is that you can press the back button on the Fire TV remote from within SPMC, and that'll actually act as a stop button instead of actually take you back like it does on the Kodi app. I've been wanting to actually do a comparison between Kodi and SPMC and Mr. MC and kind of do a head-to-head comparison, but really there's not that much difference between the apps. Each one has a few features here and there that the other one doesn't have. I don't know the full list off the top of my head, so I can't really talk about it here. Best bet is to look at like the change log of each app. And so if you go to SPMC's website, I'll link that down below, you can see what features and changes he has made to his app. You could do the same for Mr. MC, and I'll put a link down below to that change log as well. But really, they're very, very similar. And a lot of the differences you can actually achieve through like custom advanced settings. Like for example, that back button, if you want Kodi, for example, to stop the video when you hit the back button, you can assign that by just changing your advanced settings. If you go to, I'll put a link down to Kodi's wiki page for their advanced settings, and you can look through there and all different things. Basically, it involves creating a advancedsettings.xml file, on your PC and just transferring that over onto a specific directory on your Fire TV. And you can make a lot of little tweaks there to make it act the way you want. Those advanced settings are actually available on all three apps, Kodi, SPMC, and on Mr. MC. Next question here is from Cliff. He's asking about adding a Chromecast receiver support to the Fire TV, basically making it so that you can cast items to a Fire TV device through like Chromecast support or the Chromecast app. No, unfortunately, there is no way to do that. And that's mostly because Google themselves actually prevents it. So like the Fire TV, for example, you can add AirPlay support. So there are third-party apps that add AirPlay support to the Fire TV. And the only reason that's actually possible is because Apple themselves doesn't actively go out and take down those AirPlay apps. But Google themselves does go down and take down Chromecast apps that add that support to the Fire TV. A while back, we saw one app. I forgot what it was called, but I'll link it down below. But basically, it came out, it added Chromecast casting receiver support to the Fire TV. And then within a couple weeks, I think Google did like a takedown and actually forced that developer to remove their app and take it down. So unfortunately, that's not an option anymore. All right, next question here is from Monkey. He's curious in modifying his build.prop properties file on his rooted Fire TV 1. He's wondering what the risks are involved in that and whether if he gets into a boot loop, he'll be able to recover using TWRP or ADB. I don't know for sure. This is not something I've actually messed with myself, but I would imagine you should be pretty safe if you got TWRP. The build.properties file is mostly associated with the OS and the system partition. And so if you mess something up, you should still be able to get in with TWRP custom recovery and actually either replace back the original build.prop file or even just wipe out the system partition completely and reinstall a pre-rooted ROM. I don't know for sure. Again, I've never messed with it myself, and I don't know that much about build prop and messing with that and what it how it affects things, or whether it affects the kernel booting or that sort of stuff. Yeah, sorry, I can't be any more helpful, but if it was me, I would be fairly comfortable, you know, messing with build.prop because you have TWRP installed. All right, next question here is from AFTV user. He's asking if there's any way to clear the cache of multiple apps globally all at once. He said he went through each of his apps, cleared their cache to clear out about a gigabyte of internal storage space, but wondering if there's a way to do it all at once. I really don't know, but I assume actually there would be. A lot of, I know, task managers and that sort of stuff, they have those features where you can actually clear cache all at once. I know ES File Explorer has some kind of like storage analysis functionality to it. So I would imagine that there are apps out there that you can probably sideload that would do this for you. I'm sorry, I can't recommend any myself. I've never done this myself, but I don't believe app cache is like a protected thing. I think other apps can actually access and clear out the app cache for other apps. So that would allow you. The only reason you wouldn't be able to do a global all at once app cache clearer is if that was protected by the OS and other apps were prevented from actually clearing, you know, all the other apps at once. So definitely look into it. Look into third-party task managers, that sort of stuff. Look into third-party file browsers. I would imagine that those would probably be able to do this for you. All right, that will conclude the 61st episode of the AFTV Newscast. Thank you so much for watching. As always, I stream live on Fridays at 11 a.m. Pacific. I love when people can watch live. We get to interact live on Twitter. People can ask me questions live, as you probably just saw if you watched the entire episode. But of course, you can always watch after the fact, either in audio formats through any basically podcast client. You can search for the AFTV Newscast and subscribe there. I really appreciate that as well. And of course, you can watch the video version on YouTube at youtube.com/AFTV News. If you are watching on YouTube, please hit that like button down below and subscribe to my YouTube channel. Hopefully in the next coming week, I'll have that comparison video out where I'm comparing all four different Fire TV and Fire TV Stick devices, first gen and second gen gaming capabilities together. So hopefully that'll be a good video that I'll have out next week is the plan. Again, thank you so much for watching and hope to see you next week. The app has, you know, your usual areas. Oh no, I did not want to click that. That's going to come pre-installed on Fire TVs just as it is right now. My little backdrop changed. Sorry, we're having technical difficulties here, guys. Ralph says, that was the most hilarious technical glitch. You have ghosts just on time for Halloween, says Laurie. Who are you going to call Ghostbusters, says Damien. Oh, hilarious.